Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Grow Business podcast. Today, I am speaking with Christina and Ivana from Sunday Flies. How are you both?
Great. Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And where I usually always ask everyone, so people listening have a little bit of a visual as to where people are in the world. Where are you located? Where are you speaking from today?
So we are from Eastern Europe. Actually, it's Central Europe, right in the middle, Slovakia. So the heart of Europe. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because I think because not many people actually look at like an actual map, they go Eastern Europe is obviously logically in the east of Europe. But and then you're saying Central Europe, it could be quite confusing. And then you actually look at a map one day and you're like, oh, yeah, it's actually not particularly Eastern. It's more sort of central. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Like people give these labels to things. And then when you actually look at a map in the context of like where Russia is and Europe is and this is, things are all surprisingly close to each other, I always find. You go, oh, I never knew that. Yeah, I did that the other day between where Turkey was and how it comes up into Europe. It was like it's surprisingly all near each other. But anyway, we digress on that. So for everybody listening today, would the two of you or one of you be so kind as to give everyone, I guess, a little bit of a snapshot about who you are, who Sunday Flies is, and what you both do, and then we can get into the detail of all of it. Over to you.
Okay, so do you want it in one sentence or do
you want the whole story? I'd be super impressed if you did that. That'd be amazing. That would be truly amazing.
Okay, so in one sentence, Sunday Flies helps companies with high impact employee ambassador programs.
That sounds like you've done it before, Ivana.
Yes.
Okay, so given that too, I have the advantage now after having a look. I mean, you were nice enough to share your book and doing some research of my own and all that to have like a pretty good idea. But for people listening, can you, I guess, define what an employee ambassador program is? What does that mean?
Yeah, so employee ambassador is a person who is employed in a company and is representing it as a brand ambassador. So it's not an influencer who you pay to be your ambassador. You can pay them, of course, but you don't have to. But those are your own employees, whether you are a small company, like whether you have free employees or whether you are a corporation, you can have your employee ambassadors. That means that your employees' voices used to build your brand, to increase sales, and to attract new talent to your company.
Sure. So is this, I guess, like a lot of people listening would be going, oh, well, for whatever reason they might think this, they might go, oh, well, that wouldn't apply to my business because of whatever that it might be, because they're a certain size or they're a type of business. So first of all, you're doing this primarily on LinkedIn, right?
Yes, exactly. But what is good about our system, it's replicated to other social media. But we are not an expert Facebook or other Instagram social media. And they are totally different from the technical point of view. But the system we created, it's very simple to replicate to other social media. So yeah, they can do it.
Sure. So if they're, so someone like is, Is this more applicable to different sorts of businesses? Like in your experience so far, what is it business types that gravitate to this more, or is it size of business more?
Yes, I would say the very common objection we get is, this wouldn't work for us because, and you can apply anything. Yes. So we have worked with over 10,000 clients. So they have been in all of the areas that you can really imagine, from IT to banking to small solopreneurs selling courses. And it doesn't matter like how big is the company. If you want to have ambassadors or apply our system, you need at least 3 people. Yes. So if you are a solopreneur, right. We also do work with solopreneurs, but this is not like an ambassador, but it's just a social selling program, for example. So it doesn't matter what kind of company, what kind of product. Usually we get like, we are manufacturing this kind of very specific machine and we couldn't sell it through LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And then in 6 months they see, okay, we can sell it through LinkedIn. And then they are curious. Mm. So it really doesn't matter. It can be service-based. It can be product-based. It really doesn't matter. The only thing you need is to want to be seen.
That's interesting. So the title of your book that you've both co-authored is The Magic of Employee Influence, right?
Mm-hmm, That's
that word that on the title just then had like a slight little bit of new meaning for me when you just said, when you were talking about, you know, people who then have this realization and go, oh, I could never do this because of whatever, you know, probably because because people make assumptions about all sorts of things, right? They go, oh, I can do this. And they don't really think it through, but I can understand why. But then, that the title, I guess, especially in those circumstances, it might almost seem a bit like magic, I would imagine. Like for some people, they've gone, well, or they haven't, they've thought in their mind that they've tried something when, I mean, they haven't. I mean, it's easy to do, isn't it? You go, or you discard something before you sort of approach it. But can you give us like actually just maybe I see like you had a bunch of case studies on your website too. I read through a few of them. But can you give me, say, one that maybe represents what we were just talking about that like really sharp realization about like, oh my gosh, like this actually really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From the sales point of view, we have one very, very favorite case study. It was about a client. They wanted just a brand awareness on LinkedIn. They never trusted it from the point of view of sales. You know, it was like, no, this is not a platform for us, for sales. We have our ways to do it. And then in a couple months or in a couple, some period of time, they came with a huge, huge client. It was €500,000 just per one client with this LinkedIn strategy. And they just wanted brand awareness. So it's really possible and it's really magical. And it doesn't have to be, you know, very, very complicated, but it has to be formalized to work and to be sustainable. Because this is a problem when we talked with people like 1 year ago, 2 years ago, they never trusted this ambassador project. But the thing is, they trust it now, but they just give a workshop to their employees and okay, then post. Like you, everyone, post anytime you want, everything you want. But the problem is that it's not sustainable. And after a couple months, they stop posting. Because it's not for them, because it doesn't have this hooks we have in our project.
Yeah, I think the first thing that jumps into my mind is that we've had employees in the past, and like I feel that we had always been really lucky with people who we felt were like, you know, as much or as much invested in our business, almost like a business owner. And I know that's not the case with a lot of people. So I would imagine that a lot of people would, given that the whole premise of it is about utilizing like this sort of harnessing this power of employees, that if employers don't have that same mindset about their employees, first of all, and then think that or have a perception about what an employee is, I guess, too, then have you found that unless there's that grounding there, that it's probably not going to work, or that there's a way past that in order to convince people or to turn them around to go, actually, just like do this or this? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Or has that happened in the past?
Yes. Well, usually it happens when a company tells their employees, okay, for example, the CEO says, I don't like this social media. I think this is useless, but anyways, the competition is doing it. So you, Jane, are going now and building our brand online. So of course, Jane isn't very keen to build the brand. You know, she doesn't feel very, very motivated.
Yeah, she just works there, right? She just works there. What, she's going to like, you know, be an ambassador all of a sudden.
Yes, but if you find what Jane cares about, and what she wants in her life and in her career, then she is very keen to build a brand because she knows what's in it for her.
And key point, right, yeah.
Yes, and we have a 10-step process how to implement the whole project, how to launch it and then implement. And one of the key parts is a kickoff meeting where we talk to almost all employees. Sometimes it's all employees. It depends on the company and how big it is. If it's 20,000 people, of course, not all of them have to attend. So we give a presentation about LinkedIn. How does it work? What that they can gain as a person and as a company. And if they understand that if my employer looks better, I look better because I work for that company. So we help each other. Usually people don't do it just for the company. Of course, if you are the owner, yes, you want the brand to rise, but there is a way how to do it organically with your employees, but you need to know what they want. Yes. And to present it in a way. And then you ask them at the end of the kickoff meeting, who wants to get involved? So now it's on them. They need to volunteer. They need to say, okay, I'm interested. Actually, I would like. And if you just turn it like this and ask them to volunteer, then it's a privilege to become ambassador. It's not like I have to spend another hour a week for social media and I don't want to do that. It's okay. This is a huge opportunity. I will get two opportunities in our company. And also outside of the company, maybe I will get invited to podcasts or to conferences. I get more sales. And if you really know what's motivating those people, those ambassadors, then you get really, really motivated ones.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a really good explanation. And am I right in assuming that then relates to the buy-in part of what you speak about, like in your book, like of that's like the same sort of thing. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I was going through that part in your book too, and I was just sort of piece like a jigsaw puzzle, sort of piecing together things that like we always sort of think about, like in our industry and our business, what we do for clients in terms of like brand awareness and branding, and because we don't necessarily deal with the cultural, like the business culture, like because we might be working with, I mean, someone like yourself, or if there's like a business coach or people who are talking on about the same topics, but on for different reasons. But then I was going, okay, well, the brand culture, the brand awareness, and that's all then it's sort of linked really, isn't it? In a quite interesting sort of way. Cause I, when I first, you know, heard, I was introduced to you both and I was looking at the topic and my first impression was probably like a lot of people about what that might mean, that it may, you know, be something along the lines of people being told that they should do this. So I didn't really think it through, but as I was thinking about it more and thinking about the culture that it might almost be like, am I right in assuming it might also be a way for businesses to really assist their business culture even? Like it might be like a funny way that say, like even if they have like a really good culture or they're really are specific about it and everybody knows what that is and it's written down and et cetera, that this sort of process that they go through might really help with that. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Christina?
Mm-hmm. As you said, it's very important that you have your own culture, you know, and it's totally different for every company. And I give you an example. We have a company's clients from, for example, IT sector. And they always say like, yeah, but we are the same. We have the best product, the best prices, the best case studies. But what is different about us? And we always tell them, your people. Your people are different. That means your culture is different. And we saw it so many times, even in such a sector like IT sector, you know, it's totally different than the others. Of course, like every sector is different. But this is what I like about this ambassador program, that people are really the focus. And and what I like about it also about the LinkedIn ambassador project is that you are communicating externally on the platform, of course. But what is important, it helps the culture and the internal communication. So usually companies come to us when they want to change something too. So if they are changing their culture or they are doing this employer branding more sophisticated in their company, this is the right time to focus on LinkedIn too, because it can help like significantly.
Yeah, actually, I know it's probably my perception too. Now that I'm sort of reflecting on it, because I often like when I do these podcasts and things crop up, it always forces me to reflect on how I think about things. And I was like, actually, I haven't really ever thought through specifically how I think about LinkedIn, because I use it like it's our primary thing that we, you know, talk and share things, et cetera. But I guess like a lot of people, it's like a B2B platform where you're almost like an online networking platform. And I guess many people, like you touched on it before, that people may not necessarily always view it as more of a sales platform for selling things and more of a, you know, connecting to people with the potential to sell. Like, is that a perception that has cropped up like over the years with you that you've seen? Is that true?
Well, historically, people were always thinking LinkedIn is just for recruitment. So when we started 10 years ago, we had to explain, okay, it's for recruitment, of course, but you can use it for sales because it's the biggest database of business people in the world for free, you know? So when I started a headhunting company 22 years ago, we had to buy the databases. So we had to, whether we paid for the database or we had the yellow pages, and, you know, we went through it. So now you have everything online and for free on LinkedIn. So how you use those data, it's up to you. And one of the greatest uses you can have for LinkedIn, of course, is sales. I would say that each lead on LinkedIn, usually depending on the product or service, is a high value one. So you don't want to go and spam people with robotic messages that seem like they are personalized, but they are not. And everyone knows that.
Yeah. So, plenty of that going around.
Yeah. So when we, usually when we work with clients on sales, they want to sell services or products that are quite expensive. I would say 5 figures plus 6 figures and more. So when they have 6-figure projects and more expensive projects, you don't want to just throw some random messages on LinkedIn and hope that some of the spaghetti will stick. So definitely you need a strategy to do that right. And I would say that building meaningful connections is a great strategy. But there are people who are building connections for 10 years and have never had sales. And that is a problem then. Yes.
Yeah.
So you need to know how to build the connections, but then how to harness those connections and to really make sales.
Yeah. To take the next step, right? Yeah. I guess that gets back a little bit to what I touched on before is people's perception. Yeah. You know, it's like when people go, I guess in a funny way, it's the same sort of mindset that if people go to a particular service provider, like even us, for example, I've encountered this like a lot over the years, is I always think it's really, really clear, say on our website, that we do this and this and this and this and this. And I try to really spell it out and make it really obvious. But even for people who I've known for years, they go, "Oh, I didn't know you did that." And I was going, you have to be kidding, right? Like I've known you like for 10 years and they're like, "Oh no, I never knew that." And then I'm like, how could that be? How could that actually be the case? And it's like, it's not through any like fault. It's what people focus on is they have it in their mind. It's like they have in their mind that LinkedIn is a platform for this. They've always used it for that. And they haven't ever had an incentive or any reason to think otherwise. So they just keep thinking that, or they go like Saul from Roundhouse does this because that's what they used us for initially. And they haven't had any reason to think otherwise. And they're busy and they're thinking about their own stuff, you know, that I'm not about me or LinkedIn or, you know, so, but it's an interesting point because then, that revelation, I guess, that people might have about then all of a sudden LinkedIn could be this and I could utilize it this way is quite like it's a really interesting topic too. And then it comes to, I suppose, to your skill then to get past any roadblocks, right? That people, like you were talking about before, about what they think it is and how to convince them just to go to that little next step. So I'll just take a step back now as into your past. Before you became like experts in global gamified employee advocacy, which you both are, obviously. What were you doing? Like, what was the history? I usually actually ask this at the start of the podcast, but we got into it pretty quickly. So what were you both doing before you are here at this point?
So I guess I will start because I'm older sister. So we haven't said that, but we are sisters. I started a headhunting company, probably 22 years ago. And, for some years, I had a business partner. We did a headhunting for companies and, we were really good in finding people that couldn't be found for months by whether headhunters or companies. And they started to ask how to do that. And one of the tools that we used was LinkedIn. And we got really creative with using it. So it wasn't only like searching, like a similar search you could do on any job portal. You had to be really creative, especially at that time, because now AI is helping you a lot. But then you had to really come up with ideas. Okay, I'm looking for an IT person. What does he do in his free time? He dances salsa. So we use that information to find him or her. So this was the headhunting part. And then it started to shift more towards LinkedIn consulting. And this is when Christina joined around 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you can continue. Over to you, yeah. Christina.
And my story was a bit different. I used to work in totally different kind of companies. I worked for advertising agency, one of the best in the country. I worked for the big company. It was a very, very huge corporation when I had the pleasure to work with the management team, like the project management managers. And it taught me a lot, really, to how to work with busy people, because they were too busy and their time were like very expensive. So because I was just a part-time person there, I realized, okay, my time is not that expensive as theirs, so I have to work more so they can work less with me. So that's why I created a system how to shorten the meetings. We had regular meetings with management, and it was 1 hour, one and a half hour, and I shortened it to just 10 minutes. And it was very efficient. And this is what I like about me as well. And I like to find like short ways how to get the best results. And it was very efficient for me, and it was very, very efficient for the company too. So that's why I really like the job. And what else? I worked during the college, you know, and like every time I worked like one job, two jobs. So it was a lot of experiences, and this helped me a lot with the headhunting, because I could really imagine how does it feel to work there, to there, to there, to there, because it was totally different kind of companies, and the size was as well very different. So this is what helped me today too. I can really see what is their problem. And headhunting was very special for me because I never thought I will do it. This is very funny that my ex-boyfriend told me, yeah, you should work together. I said, no, this is her job. This is what
I never thought you were going to do it.
No, because I thought this will destroy our relationship. Because, you know, when you work with family and
It is true sometimes. Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But for us, it was totally opposite. I see it this way. I hope you see it too. But I moved from our city. I moved from the Bratislava. I moved 400 kilometers apart. And this is the thing, that if we don't work together, we would not talk to each other as often, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, there you go.
This helped us a lot. Mm-hmm.
It was like your own employee ambassador program for your relationship. Yeah, but that's true. Yeah, but it's true though, isn't it? Like it depends on the people, but like it can sometimes, like having I'm starting to form like a bit of my picture of a clearer picture on I ask that sort of history part, because it always gives like a little bit of an extra insight, like for people listening to about then like things that you obviously tuned into earlier on that led to where you are now. But it's a bit like I've brought this up probably way too many times on this podcast about like the sport analogy. But I like, especially with things like that, like my sister had always been in HR, and she had worked for some really big recruitment companies and did a lot of headhunting and all that too. And she used to talk to me about it, and we've had clients, and I've never, like, I hear people talk about it, and always I've always had that general perception that there's obviously good personal skills, there's like speed, there's specific timing you have to get things done by. So there's all these elements that come together that make you have to think on the fly a lot and then achieve a good result. So there's that sort of sport in that real time sort of way. You don't always have the luxury to like, oh, we'll, you know, we'll see how that works out and, you know, take your time. Like, you got to get these things done, right? And then you, Christina, like, you didn't think that you were going to be that sort of person. But then, like, it was obviously within you. And then once you realized it, it was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. Right? You know, and you had this like great thing in common that you could both, you know, work on, which I think is great. Like, that's a nice story to hear too. And it's like, I guess it's like many of the reason why an employee ambassador program then works when it's authentic, right, too, because it obviously has to be, it has to feel and be authentic, because otherwise people are like, eh, that doesn't sound like that would be true, you know, like, it's got to be real.
Yes, and, you know, this is what happens usually when you just let your people post by themselves. They don't really know where they are going. So it's like all over the place. We call it the random acts of social, because, you know, some people may perceive the culture differently in the same company, yep, as the other, depending on the department, management level. And it's okay. But if they know where they are going, so it's not about having messages on the door or on the walls, like, this is our culture, this is our, like, what we stand for, but really living it. And if it's authentic, then you will attract people who are similar. So, for example, when you, we have talked about talent, so of course you want to attract people who are similar to your teams, but it's the same and it's applicable to sales too. So you want to attract clients that you like, you can get great results for, and you are profitable, of course, very profitable. Mm. So you want to have all three. And this is what you also said. You can always repeat what you're doing. And after 10 years, people are still asking, really, you're doing this? And with LinkedIn content specifically, you can teach them exactly what you do, how you do it, what is the process, what is the price. Of course, depending on a project and so on, but are you expensive or not? Yes, so they will know, okay, he's expensive, but he's good, you know, for example. Mm. That's cool. And you really want them in sales to know who to attract. So, for example, you can minimize the meetings with potential clients because they already know how you work, who you work with, what kind of companies you help, what kind of companies you get results for. And then you get maybe you get 10 meetings and one client. Yes. Or you can get 10 meetings and 8 clients if you do write the content, you know, so depending on the conversion rate, of course, and the product or service. Mm. So it gets so much easier. The whole business gets so much easier if you are yourself on LinkedIn. You don't have to pretend, because it's pretty hard to pretend to be someone for a long time.
It is. It's actually hard because most people don't ever have any reason to do it, right? They're just themselves. So all of a sudden they're thrust into something where even if they don't have to be something else, like the business version of John Smith or like, you know, Jane, they feel maybe like they have to, because they're not, you know, is it a bit like a different version of the fear of like when people aren't very used to public speaking, or, you know, and then they all of a sudden, they might be quite good speakers, but they've never had to do it. So there's the fear of the unknown, about, oh, I've got to be something. So unless they're told what that is, the unknown thing remains, doesn't it? Like it's still looming there over in the corner. Like, and they, unless like somebody spells it out, that's obviously, is it true to say that that's like a sort of at the heart of some of this that people like just actually, it's like, I know it sounds a bit like I'm oversimplifying it, but that they actually just know what they need to do. They like, you know, here's the rules of the game. It's like you can't play a game or you can't go on a trip unless you know what the path is, because otherwise you'll just be like, you know, driving up some random road and you'll never get there.
Like, yes, you want to be liberal with the rules so that they have a chance to create, because there are some companies who just give their employees content, like a corporate content, and they want them to share it. But of course, it has some value, but their own stories are much more powerful, like 100 times more powerful. So if you are too strict, people will not create. They will just give some like, and then they will say on Glassdoor.com that my employer made me to go and like their content. Yes, you don't want that. But also you want to give them the structure and the rules so that they know, for example, that if I wouldn't say this on a meeting with our competition, I wouldn't post it on LinkedIn. Well, then they know, okay, this is safe to post, this is not safe to post. They need to have guidelines. It's not that simple, just you tell them, okay, go and post whatever, because one day you will wake up and see a post you don't want to see. So you want to teach them, for example, very important thing, what they post online anywhere, it's there forever. So if they are angry about their employer, for example, you want to tell them in advance that if they are angry, they want to go in-house and talk to someone in the company. If they are satisfied and things are going well, they want to post it on socials. And if they know in advance, they will know when they are angry, like it all sometimes things happen. Employees get angry and you don't want them to post anywhere. And the thing is, sometimes companies are asking, what if the people post there something that we don't want them to? So you need to train them. This is thing number one. And thing number two, they would post it not on LinkedIn, but on their Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, like anywhere. Yeah. You can, now there is a trend of the live videos on TikTok where employees are filming themselves, telling their employers they are not satisfied. Yes, and it's life. So you as an employer are like, you know, like a deer in the light, and they are filming you and telling you, okay, this is why I'm not satisfied with this company. So this is happening. People are living social lives. So we need to give them rules how to do that and where to go when they are dissatisfied and what to post if they are satisfied and want to share.
Yeah. We touched on this before too, but is that perceived risk, which actually may not be risky at all, is the perceived risk of something like that happening at some distant future point for an employer way too much to bear? Like, it depends on the person too, I guess, if they're like, you know, if they had some bad experience in the past, maybe they just can't get past that sometimes. But am I right in assuming you've got different sorts of strategies like to help people through that? Like, it might be almost like being like a psychologist, I guess, right? You know, like you have to help people through it. Hey.
Yes, you have to do it because the persons are very emotional. And yeah. The employer has to know what is the emotion these people are going through, you know, because some are really very angry and they go to socials. We saw it. Yeah, we saw it on LinkedIn too. And what is the difference? What will do the company? If the company is silent, okay, this might be a sign that there is something true about the sentences the person wrote. So we also train our clients what to do with the haters, because it's, you know, it's a topic. And we have not so many haters on LinkedIn now, but maybe it will change in the future.
Yeah, it's not really the platform for that, is it? It doesn't seem to happen a lot on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's because they are really, you know, joined with the company. So that's why. And maybe they just want to look better. But we know some people who are like really like haters to everyone. And usually it's like, okay, this is the hater, like nothing to do with him. But sometimes the person is not a hater. He or she is just curious. They just want to, you know, create a discussion under your post. So
they just don't know how to express it.
Exactly.
They just actually don't know.
Sometimes it's just, okay, the first step is, okay, don't take them as a haters, just a curious person. This is the first thing. And if they're a real hater, they will show it.
That's a lovely positive spin on it. I'm Christina. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw it, and I have my Ivana with me, and this is the thing. Like, always have someone who is more diplomatic than you, because I'm not.
Very wise. Yes. Yeah.
And this is the thing. Like, we are similar, but we are totally different. And I am not diplomatic at all, and I'm more like straightforward. And Ivana is more diplomatic and more, you know. I think like people like her more because she's, you know, so sweet and everything.
On you, Ivana. Well done. Someone has to be more sweet. Might as well be
so
you.
So it's always good to have someone like this in your team when you are dealing with haters. Like, of course.
It's true. It's like, it's really, really true though. Yeah. I mean, I'm probably a mix. I know in the past though, I would definitely like have had somebody there to go, hang on, just like before you open your mouth, just like press pause for a second. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's always great having someone in your corner. And then especially, I guess, in the whole, yeah, I think we're talking about too, if that can be your employer, you know, to actually, if you're able to have that relationship, like not only just, you know, sort of in the workplace, but if you, because I guess the natural thing is that once people feel, you know, we're talking about buy-in and they feel empowered, like, oh, actually this, it's not just my employer giving me some staff to distribute, and it's not in my pay grade, you know, to do that. It's, and like, why should I do it? But I've been told to do it. If they actually go, actually, I really want to do this because it presents me well and it lifts, and it actually, you know, then is it, have you found ever in the past through any personal stories then after the fact that it's actually improved their relationship, like the actual employee at the employer employee relationship? Has that happened?
Yes, it happens very often, almost every time, because the project lasts around 1 year. So when we give it to the employer, and then they continue. So we work with them for a year, and usually there are people from different departments who work together in this ambassador project who wouldn't work together any other way. So, for example, you have a person who is junior in HR working with a board member in a small group of five.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So for the junior person, you would never get to a board member and to work with them so closely. So it's very, and also for the board member, it's very interesting to know how do the junior people in their company feel? How do they perceive the culture? What kind of problems do they have? So the cooperation is really mutually beneficial for all of the people who are involved. Usually in these projects, we start with 5-6 people. So it's a really small project team, and you get influence in the company you would never get usually. Yes. Even though if you're a managerial position, once you have the social proof of the people outside your company, then also people inside your company will see, oh, this is really interesting. So, for example, you tell them why you have made changes in your companies or in your department. That's one thing. But if you say it on social media and people come there and it has 300 likes and I don't know, 50 comments like, wow, this is really interesting. And it's a very nice project. Then people see the social proof and actually it makes the change more valuable inside the company. So this is very interesting. Usually companies just think about external influence, but also the internal influence is very strong. And the people who are involved as ambassadors usually get recognized. They get invited to conferences. They get awards like HR talent, or we had people got awarded as the best LinkedIn profiles in their field internationally. We work with companies globally, so they get global exposure usually. And the project is always made in a way so that the ambassadors will gain. Not only the company, but we want them to win, to feel great and to have fun, because then it's sustainable. It's not just 3 months of posting random things. It's a really meaningful project that gives power to their voice and to their company. And it creates like a movement inside the company. It creates a culture where other people outside the ambassador team want to participate, and they say, okay, I want to get in, and how do you do it? I want to get trained. So it has a really strong ripple effect for the ambassadors, not only for the company.
I think it's fascinating. I think, because as what always, you know, like I said before, what ends up happening on just about every podcast I do is like, as we're talking about these things, my mind's kind of, you know, working away going, oh, and then this would happen. And then when that sort of occurred to me just then about how it could potentially affect like not just the things that you want to happen on LinkedIn, that it's got this really amazing sort of side effect potentially, because I was just like ran a little scenario through in my mind as we were talking about like that. I mean, you were saying about how a board member all of a sudden for the first time, maybe ever, has this like completely different level of conversation with, you know, a junior person, which would usually never happen. And they don't, and it's not like, and it, you know, it's probably not that they would never want that to happen. It just doesn't happen. They don't cross paths. And so all of a sudden there's like the whole lot of previously unknown sort of insights occur to each other, which is often just on that human level. It's like when you have an idea about person A, which you have no idea whether that's true or not, that they're whatever, and the other person has their own set of like ideas, then all of a sudden when they actually meet and actually talk, they all like largely disappear, and people like might find, you know, things in common, or they're both like this, or they're both, you know, play this particular sport. I mean, like sport and cultural things are such a great connector. They seem to like magically dissipate walls that are in place, and people go, oh, I'm a, you know, I play squash. I always bring it up on this podcast because I'm like crazy about squash. So sorry, everyone who's like heard this for about the millionth time for me going blah, blah, blah about squash. But, you know, but it's happened to me in the past too. I've met people and it just whatever, however it happens, you go, oh, I used to play squash. Really? Wow. And then you end up talking about squash for the next like half an hour. Don't talk about business at all. But you've created this kind of link that you'd never be able to get otherwise. And like, I find it really fascinating that then the facility for that to happen, you know, to have a conversation is kind of enabled by this program in a way. You've got these people working together that don't have a reason to normally, but then they do. And then it happens. I think it's amazing. And you just like taking a step back to, because I really wanted to ask, I know you had an explanation on your website about why you call the business name Sunday Flies, but can you, I want to find out a little bit more, because you had like your version on the website. Are there any other reasons, or is it just what it says on the website as to like the dragonfly thing?
Yeah. Like it has many reasons. Ivana, do you want to say it or I should?
Go ahead.
Okay. So it has really many reasons. The dragonfly is a very, very interesting species, or the dragonfly as it itself. So if you don't know it, you should really search for it, because it's amazing. That's why we knew that we want this animal in our logo. And it was because we love Gilmore Girls. And there was this one person, and she has a dream about her inn, and it was called a Dragonfly Inn. So that's why we chose a dragonfly for our logo.
I like dragonflies. I actually know, you may be surprised, Christina and Ivana, I know a fair bit about dragonflies. I don't, it's not through any, I'm not like a dragonfly nerd or anything, but I'll just like share this little story. We got this property out in the bush, and one day I was just on the deck and whatever I was doing, and I was sitting down, and we often, there's like really beautiful dragonflies that, and this particular one, I had this experience, this dragonfly landed right next to me on the deck. It was like only about 50 centimeters away. Just landed on the deck, and it was like metallic silver. It was amazing. It was like this really beautiful dragonfly, and I just actually put my hand out, and I just to see like what would happen. I just put it out slowly, and it actually walked over to me, and it had sort of no fear. It was like this really simple experience, but it was kind of amazing, because I just generally that it would be afraid, but it sort of walked over, and I said hello to it. I won't say how I said it, because it'll sound silly on the podcast. I was like, hello, you know, to the dragonfly in some sort of way, you know, in my way. And it walked over, and it kind of looked at me and put its little head on the side. It sat there for quite a while, and then it actually walked onto my hand, and then I was like, okay, and then it flew away. But I could see what I was like. It was quite, I've always found them really like obviously very beautiful. But you were saying too, in relation to hunting, that there's an element of that. Can you say like how that relates to? Because I thought that was really interesting as well.
Mm-hmm. They are very, very effective. The thing we love about dragonflies is they're beautiful, they're elegant, but they're very effective in hunting. In around 98%, they catch their prey. So they're probably the most effective hunters on the surface of Earth.
Probably, yeah.
And really comes back to the sales and social selling that we do, because even though we started as headhunters, headhunting is sales. It's just pure sales. People think it's something else. It's not. It's sales.
Yep.
We're selling to two parties, the person and the position. So you really need to dig deep into the motivation of people. And this is what we liked about the dragonfly, that it's really a kind of species that has been here for thousands of years, probably hundreds of thousands, so like really, really old. And it's still here, still effective and still beautiful. And people always think about it differently as it is, you know. So it's a really good hunter.
Do you know, just out of interest, I'm sure there'd be some good metaphor here for what we're talking about, or maybe not, but it's still an interesting point, is do you know, just out of interest, about the transformation that a dragonfly has from when it's a larvae? Do you know what the larvae is like?
Not really, not really. I haven't dug deep. Tell us.
I do. It's quite weird. It's probably I can't remember what they're called. Let's just call it the dragonfly. It's like the I think in the stage, because I know a fair bit of, like, strangely enough, I don't know how I know these facts, but I just do. There's these about, like, there's different stages with insects, and one's the, I think it's the nymph stage. So I think it's the nymph stage of dragonflies is pretty wild. Like, it's a really strange creature. It actually lives underwater, and it still breathes air, so it goes up, but it's got this I wouldn't say it's creepy, it's just a bizarre creature. It's got this gigantic it, like, hunts things under the water, but it's got this gigantic, almost like if you open up, like, a drawer in, like, a cabinet, and the drawer comes out and you put it in again, its mouth is like this giant drawer that comes out exactly like that, and it goes straight out and grabs stuff and goes and draws it in again. It's pretty wild. And then all of a sudden, but it's interesting, because there's, you know, in its stage, and I guess, like, you know, all of us too, and maybe, you know, I'm not trying to compare people with the nymph stage of a dragonfly, because that's kind of weird, but still, like, the fact it's the general principle, everyone listening, okay, don't get me wrong, don't misinterpret what I'm saying, you know, but just to about, like, the extreme transformation sometimes that people have, like, say if you were going to go, okay, here's a good metaphor, that the person who's the employee who's just doing their job, then all of a sudden they have this, like, great set of, like, interesting realizations, like, and the metaphor being the extreme change, you know, that, say, this, you know, if we take that metaphor further and go, like, the extreme potential, I guess, even for the change and how different it could be, you know, I guess that's probably, I would imagine that could be, like, really transformational for people. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that? Like, because you would obviously then be speaking with a lot of different people who are employees who used to perceive themselves like this, and then after that they are really transformed. Has that happened?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. We, like, what I really like is when our ambassador is introvert. No, maybe it's like we have usually at least one introvert in our team, like the in the client side. And they say, like, oh, I don't like posting. I don't like it at all. But we chose them before because of something. And we have a system for it. So we know that the person we chose, it's good for the ambassador project. And even introverts are very good on social media. And I have one particular in my mind, and she never posted, for example, selfie or something like this, because she was so team oriented, and her posts are always full of love for the team and the company. So this is what I like about it. You don't have to post your selfie on LinkedIn, but you can make an impact with the post photos of your colleagues, for example, of your office. And you can find your own way, even if you are an introvert.
Yeah, because people do. I actually really believe that people do really, really know authenticity when they see it. They might not be able to explain it, why it is, but that maybe that's why they can too, because it's got a certain X factor element that they can't explain, but they know it when they see it, and they go I'm super attuned because of, like, all the years of design and seeing, you know, professionally shot photos, amateurly shot photos, stock photos, Like you can tell, like I can tell the difference. I've got a different level of understanding, but then most people can too. Most people intuitively know, you know, that it's, you know, really obvious things like, you know, having every particular racial group and every particular, like in a photo, mm-hmm. in a business situation, and everyone's like of a pretty high level of good looking is highly unlikely. I mean, you know, and so straight away as like a red flag going, hang on a second, that's probably, and plus like there's a low level of like Afro-American people, say in Australia. So having that in Australian audience is like, that's, that seems a bit off, you know, but things like that are obvious. But then, then throwing in, it's not just photography. It's like what you're talking about, language, how people do it. And I can, like, I'm really starting to form a picture, and I hope people listening to the podcast are too, because I think it like sounds like a really, like from a brand perspective for me, like being sort of a brand designer, it's a really interesting way to sort of shift culture almost, like within, through this like other means, and then you're shifting it. So I also read too, like you, I think this was on your website, there was this thing that I wanted to find a little bit more out about. You said somewhere, and forgive me for not remembering where, you said when we were growing up, a common saying was the names of fools are found on all pillars. A phrase that reflected our society's disdain for standing out. Where was that said, and what was the relevance of that saying again?
Yes, so we were raised in Eastern / the Central Europe, and it wasn't very common, and it wasn't, people were not motivated to be seen. Yes, people were motivated to be the same, to still be the same, to be on the same level. Like if you stick your head a little bit up,
just blend in.
You had a problem. Yes. So usually people were trained to blend in and to really not be too visible. And this is what they say. Yes. The name of the fools are on all pillars. That means that being visible is foolish.
Right.
And you shouldn't be visible. You should just blend in and work hard. And this is what is really ingrained, not only in Eastern European culture, but all over the world, because we work with people globally. And you can see that really all over the world, like work hard, be quiet. And, you know, you have to, your work will show.
Yeah.
Maybe except the US, where there is a different culture. But we have seen it a lot that people who really work hard and they are great workers, they have great results, they are just quiet. And then they ask, why am I not talking at this conference? Why am I not here or there? Why am I not in Forbes? Well, because people don't know what you are doing. Probably just a small fraction of people, even in your company, know what you are actually doing.
Yeah.
So what we really realized during the headhunting career, that the story that you have and that you are visible, the little quirks and the squashes and the things that you love are the things that people love about you, and at the end, this is why they would work with you or they would make business with you. Because yeah. love that you love squash, whether they play it or not, it doesn't matter. They don't have to be, they don't have to love squash, but they love your passion for squash. So it really makes you industry famous. And this is the thing. Industry famous means that you are not in like the cover of Daily Mail, you know, or something like this. But actually, when you step into a room of a conference of 100 people, you get people tell you, oh, I have seen your post on LinkedIn. I know what you do. Let's grab a coffee. So you are practically never alone, you know, in these events.
Yeah.
Even worldwide, and this is crazy that sometimes client go to the other part of the world. It also happens to us. We go to, I've been to Miami, for example, 3 weeks ago, and people just go, oh, I have just read what you wrote about, I don't know, being visible, for example. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool that the world is just getting smaller and smaller. And that really, if you decide to be visible, and it's scary for anyone. But
it's true, very true. Yeah,
yeah, but if we did it in Eastern Europe, we know we can do it everywhere. And this is why our global projects were born, because there were very interesting people here in Slovakia who brought projects to global playground. Like, for example, we work with a retailer. Can I say the name?
Sure.
DM Drogerie. It's the biggest drugstore here in Slovakia and in Europe probably. And they started a project here with five, six people here in Slovakia. And now if you look at pages of DM Drogerie all over Europe, their LinkedIn is full and, you know, flourishing. And it started in a tiny country of 5 million people. And they're just fascinating.
I think it's a wonderful testament, like to that very idea that, like, you know, from little things, like, you know, great things grow, because it's really, you know, it's like a lot of different cliches that are thrown around. That's like they're usually cliches because they're true, because like they're actually true, and then people, you know, they apply a sort of a negative connotation to that fact, but the fact is remains that it's still true, and that you've got you know, from one person's story, like being a nerd in almost anything, you know, whether a nerd like taking it outside of the context of a tech nerd, like a nerd being somebody who's really, really into something or things. That's like, there's always, even if it's like super niche, it's like a tiny niche thing, there's always like way, way more people out there than you realize who are really into that. And that's obviously like, that feels like that's a strong element of why, you know, things that we've been talking about ultimately kind of work too, because like, even if it's not some really niche thing, but somebody is talking about a passion of theirs and their employee, and or they're showing how much they love their team, and like that, all those little tiny things say something very specific about them that somebody else is going to relate to very strongly, even if there's like a relatively small group. But often those like small groups are quite big too, and nobody knows how big those groups are because nobody's done a survey on them. You know, they haven't gone, oh, like how many people into like the larvae of a dragonfly are there out there? There's probably millions. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not one of them, by the way. I just like know that fact, but I find it fascinating. And it links back to, I guess, maybe curiosity too, you think? Mm-hmm. Like in things, like people have to be curious to want to know more, but there's almost like a certain magnetism to it when they see authenticity, like on, you know, somebody in a normal context, online, when a person looking at an employee of a company, and their usual experience would be that they're probably going to be sharing some company related, sanitized kind of information, and that doesn't happen, they're like, well, that's really like, if I saw that, like now that we've been talking about this, like I can't necessarily think of a time where I've specifically seen that, but now that I'm imagining it, because I've got like a reasonably good imagination, I would imagine I would be like really kind of surprised and really interested. I would be like, oh, that would like grab your attention in the sea of like all this other stuff. You'd be like, oh, hang on a second. That's really different. And like, cause there's like so much information, right? And you're just like constantly, I mean, in saying that, I do actually, like, I don't really go onto Facebook anymore. I just don't really enjoy it. I don't really go on. I look at a lot of YouTube videos about specific things, a lot of squash. Sorry, you know, it's all squash. It's true. I admit it. But like a lot of other things, but then I spend like, there's a lot of great content usually on LinkedIn. There's a lot of like I think anyway, a lot of valuable things that I like looking at. And it's often related to people I actually know too. So I'm, you know, I want to share it and stuff, but, so like as we're, I guess, as we're getting onto like the tail end of our deep dive into all this, which is like super interesting. What, who was there a particular group of people or not that the book was actually written for in the first instance? Who was it actually written for?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it written for?
Yeah, of course. We had our person in our mind during the whole process. We wrote it down and we saw it. And every time we moved somewhere, we had to really focus on our person. So it was very important for us to talk to the exact client of the book, you know, of the reader. So this book is for the person, the project hero. So the person who is responsible for the LinkedIn presence in the company. And usually it's a person who is just one person, and it's a lot of work for one person. So they need help, for example, other for colleagues from the company, or yeah. It can be, for example, HR manager who sees a huge potential in the LinkedIn presence for the company. And they need to show up on the regular basis. And they saw the potential of the ambassador project in the company. So it's the project hero who reads the book for us.
Okay. Yeah. How about, have you found also that there's like, say, that particular person that might sometimes be like, say, internal marketing manager, like who's responsible? Is it that sort of person too?
Yes, yes. Usually it's HR or marketing. So those two roles, sometimes employer branding or a CEO if it's a bigger company. And the book is actually about how to structure the project. So it means if you want more people from your company to be involved in LinkedIn and you don't know how, you will know how in 10 steps. And actually what was very important for us is to give the reader a process where you can do that in just 10 hours. Because usually this process takes months to do. And we have seen it for 10 years. So it really takes months. Some companies really go around the project for years until they really decide and they have all the ducks in the row to start. But it's not that hard if you really know the process, how to do it. And you want to do it at the beginning in a structured way. Because then if your ambassadors stop posting, just to give them CPR, it's harder than start really good from the first point. So you need to start with a structured project. And this is why we wrote the book, because globally, we haven't seen a book that does this really help with the whole process, how to implement the LinkedIn project. And usually it's done somehow intuitively, but there are many problems that will come up. And we also cover it in the book, like the problems that you will come up with if you don't have the right structure. So feel free to dive in if you're listening.
Yeah, well, it's like, honestly, it's probably the first time I've actually heard of this that your specific approach, because I think, like I said, like early on in the podcast, when I was thinking about it, I was like, is it this? Is it that? And then of course I started reading the book and I actually found out. So that was like the best way to find out, you know, but I can really see, and I hope people listening to can sort of see the benefits. I think there's like many, like for me, it sort of sounds like it's a multi-faceted sort of approach. And like we said before, it has the ability potentially for people to really, to kind of like give a little boost or like extra interesting things in their business culture, maybe too, like that might be like a little pleasant surprise that they find out about as they're going through, you know, like you don't know until you try, when you start talking to each other, and then you're like, oh, actually it's like easier than I thought, and you're way nicer than I thought you were, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, all those things that kind of appear. So I said also at the beginning, before we started the podcast, that I was going to ask you to provide a quote as well. So to Ivana or Christina, do you want to, have you got one? Have you got like a quote that you'd like to say that's relevant or you dislike, or like, it can be about dragonflies if you want.
It doesn't have to be. Christina, do you have one? I do, but go ahead.
You can.
Okay. So mine isn't a quote. It's a motivational ending of this speech we had.
Right. Fantastic.
It's a thing that your voice is really powerful. You have your voice to change people's lives. On a different scale in your company, in other companies, and your voice is really needed. So if you just keep it for yourself, telling yourself you don't need to be visible, you're harming other people of your help and your influence that you can have over their lives. So don't be afraid and try it. And I want to say, almost everyone, I would say everyone, is scared to be visible in some shape or form, especially when we work with people who have English as a second language, for example. Mm. Well, this is a thing that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you do mistakes. It doesn't matter if your picture on LinkedIn is not that good or the text will get better over time. What matters is that you give yourself permission to be more visible in this year. So I wish you that.
That's wonderful. That's good. That's very good. Also, by the way, I like that. Have you got one also, Christina?
I do, but you know, after
Are
this
you,
one.
Don't be shy. Don't be shy now.
Okay, my voice matters. Okay. So what I really like is the don't be scared part. If you are scared, don't go to the forest, as we say it in Slovakia. And this is why we work on our project. They are very, you know, unique. And we always find something that is missing on the market because we are not scared.
I really like that, actually. If you're scared, don't go to the forest. I like that. It's a good one. Yeah, forest is quite nice though. So, except
you know, after Ivana, it was, you know, totally lame. Emotional with the tears and everything.
No. No, I found yours far more impactful.
The thing is, my second one was the one you said, Christina.
Ah, okay.
I had a teacher in secondary school. She told me that all the time. And I just love that since then. And sometimes it's, you know, it's about not being scared. Sometimes it's about dancing with being scared and going anyway. And thank you very much for having us and for enabling us to share the message.
My pleasure. And I love the sister repartee too. It's very obvious. Yeah, no, it's great. And so just on a, I guess on a final note, what's the best way for people to actually find out? Like, we'll have a link in the description, but where do people go online to learn more? What's the best place?
LinkedIn. Yeah, the best place, of course, is to go to LinkedIn and you will find the links, or you can go to sundayflies.com. If you want to buy the book, you can go to Amazon. Thank it's you. Available locally, so thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks, Ivana. Thanks, Christina. It's been like a really great conversation, very, very insightful, actually, and I hope people listening like have a few thoughts and maybe like a different perspective than they otherwise had. And so with that in mind, everybody, that's actually it for today. Thanks again for listening to the Grow Your Business Podcast. And say goodbye, Christina and Ivana. Say goodbye to everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.